Welcome to The Refresh from Insider. I'm Dave Smith.
And I'm Rebecca Ibarra. It's Monday, August 22nd, and we're the podcast that updates whenever there's news all day, every weekday.
Here's the latest.
Oof, the markets just had their worst day since June as all three major stock indexes closed way down today amid fears on Wall Street of interest rate hikes to come. The Dow closed the day down almost 2%, the S&P was down over 2%, and the NASDAQ fell more than 2.5%. Many investors are looking at what could be a volatile week of trading ahead of Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's latest remarks on inflation.
You'll never believe the new clean energy researchers have come up with. Artificial leaves. Did you see what I did there? Did you like it? Taking inspiration from photosynthesis, researchers at the University of Cambridge found that their artificial leaves, which float on water, are as good at converting sunlight and water into energy as organic floating leaf plants like lilies. They created a first version of their robo leaf back in 2019, but it was too bulky. This new version is light enough to float, which means that it could be deployed at sea and used to reduce fossil fuels in the shipping industry.
The Dallas-Fort Worth area has been hit with a whole summer's worth of rain in about a day between Sunday afternoon and this morning. Streets and highways were still underwater as of this afternoon, with hundreds of traffic accidents reported, according to the Dallas Police Department. Authorities even evacuated residents in some neighborhoods who were impacted by flash flooding overnight. The deluge, fueled by the climate crisis, comes just as Dallas and most of Texas is dealing with extreme drought. One of Donald Trump's political committees donated $650,000 to the Smithsonian Institution, and Insider has just figured out what the money is for. Here's my colleague Dave Leventhal.
Today, a Smithsonian official confirmed to Insider that the money would help fund official portraits for Donald and Melania Trump ahead of what's a yet-to-be-scheduled unveiling at the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C.
We still don't know the names of the artists commissioned to paint the portraits. Russia is blaming Ukraine's spy services for this weekend's high-profile assassination of Daria Dugina. Dugina died in a car bombing. She was the 29-year-old daughter of a prominent pro-Putin writer and intellectual who Russian media says was the intended target. What's interesting is that Russia's Federal Security Service is pointing the finger at a specific suspect, a Ukrainian woman named Natalia Volk, claiming she traveled to Russia with her 12-year-old daughter and escaped to Estonia after the killing. An attack so close to Moscow is unusual, putting added pressure on Russia's nearly six-month war against Ukraine.
Hey, if you like any of these segments that we're producing for The Refresh from Insider, did you know that you can share any of them on social media? It's true. Just look in the description section of your podcast app and you'll see a little share link next to each story. It's super easy. Give it a try.
Coming up, looking back on a year since the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Sometimes a single incident sheds light on something larger. In this case, the something larger is a growing, more virulent nationalism in China, which has led, among other things, to an increased anti-Japanese sentiment. The incident here was simple. A Chinese woman dressed up in a traditional Japanese kimono for a little manga-inspired cosplay, and she went out on a street in Suzhou to take some pictures. She was then detained by police for 5 hours, accused of, quote, picking quarrels and provoking trouble. A viral video of the incident shows a cop shouting, "You're wearing a kimono. You're Chinese."
Dr. Anthony Fauci says he is stepping down in December from his role as chief medical advisor to the president of the United States. Fauci has spent his entire career in public service, joining the NIH as his first job in 1968 at just 27 years old. And he has led the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases since 1984. But his public profile reached new heights during the COVID pandemic, when a confused nation desperate for answers tuned into his press briefings. The 81-year-old has served in his White House role since 2021, and President Biden said in a statement that the country is, quote, stronger, more resilient, and healthier because of him.
Twitter employees cannot catch a break. The company's CFO recently sent word that they'd only be getting half of their annual bonuses because of financial issues. Insider's Jordan Erb has the story.
This comes just after we reported that Twitter workers have been leaving in hordes recently. One told Insider that they're just mentally exhausted from the ongoing drama with Elon Musk, while another said that their coworkers are announcing their departures at least once a week, if not more.
Jordan writes Insider's 10 Things in Tech newsletter.
Mark Zuckerberg was absolutely roasted online last week after a relatively routine announcement to promote Meta's VR app Horizon Worlds coming to France and Spain. Part of that announcement included a picture of his own avatar in front of a digital Eiffel Tower, and it just looked, frankly, awful. The whole image was described as something not advanced enough even for the Nintendo Wii, with an uncanny valley face and Polar Express-esque dead eyes. Anyway, on Saturday, Zuck posted an updated avatar. It's definitely an improvement, though in fairness, it couldn't get any worse. And I would also argue that there's only so much technology can do to make Mark Zuckerberg look more human.
In just 1 year, Nate Fisher went from striking out typos in commercial loan contracts to striking out the Philadelphia Phillies for the New York Mets. The 26-year-old's pro baseball career was full of setbacks. He wasn't drafted out of college, and the pandemic put a pause on his ambitions. So he settled down, got a job at a bank. But last year, Fisher decided to give his dreams another shot. And when he was finally called up on Sunday for his major league debut, he helped the Mets get through three middle innings without letting up any runs in the team's 10-9 comeback win over the Phillies. This month marks a year since the U.S. pulled all of its troops out of Afghanistan, ending a 20-year war.
I am President of the United States of America, and the buck stops with me.
The withdrawal was chaotic, to say the least, and it marked the first time Joe Biden's approval rating sank below 50%.
I'm deeply saddened by the facts we now face, but I do not regret my decision to end America's war fighting in Afghanistan and maintain a laser focus on our counterterrorism missions there and other parts of the world.
Insider's John Haltewanger, who covers politics and defense, is here to look back on what went wrong and its effects today. Hey, John.
Hi there.
So can you remind our listeners what happened last August?
So on August 15th, 2021, the Taliban marched into Kabul, the Afghan capital, which effectively marked them regaining control of the country for the first time since 2001, when the U.S. invaded Afghanistan in response to the 9/11 terror attacks. The U.S. was going after Osama bin Laden, who was suspected of being in Afghanistan at the time. The Taliban was accused of harboring bin Laden. But we ended up staying for 20 years. And our mission there shifted multiple times. And by August 2021, the Biden administration had decided it was time to rip the Band-Aid off and pull U.S. troops out. But it ended up being quite chaotic. There was a lot of panic in the capital. People were desperately trying to flee the country. There were some really harrowing images coming out of the Afghan capital. People literally clinging to U.S. military planes falling from the sky. It was a disastrous situation, especially in terms of the optics for the U.S.
You've spoken to foreign policy experts and members of Congress about the withdrawal. In retrospect, what do they say went wrong?
Thousands of Afghan allies, people who assisted the U.S. military during the war, people who served as translators, were left behind. People argued that there should have been more of an apparatus in place to organize visas for these people ahead of, you know, this final pullout, because they had targets on their back. The Taliban effectively views them as traitors. And the message that was sent, in the view of critics, was that the U.S. can't be trusted to back up its allies, that the U.S. abandons people who helps it.
Do you not think, though, that this kind of chaotic pullout was inevitable, no matter who executed it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very important point. America's failures in Afghanistan are owned by multiple presidents. This war occurred across four different administrations, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration. It was the Trump administration that brokered a deal with the Taliban to pull out U.S. troops. Biden inherited that deal. For all intents and purposes, when the withdrawal was occurring last August, Afghanistan was essentially at civil war. The Taliban was actively trying to regain territory, fighting against the Afghan military. And in that context, it's pretty hard to have a clean withdrawal and to wind things down in a very peaceful or smooth fashion. So yeah, it's certainly evident that this was going to be messy, probably no matter what. I think that a lot of critics, argue the degree of messiness might have been less if there had been more care taken in terms of preparing for the withdrawal.
So what lessons did the U.S. learn, or should the U.S. learn from this war and the withdrawal?
The U.S. invaded Afghanistan in 2001. We ended up staying for two decades. By the time we left, U.S. service members that were in the country, some of them hadn't even been alive on 9/11. That's how long we were there. It just kind of goes to show that we kind of lost sense of what we were doing there. We got involved in a nation-building project, essentially trying to force our form of government and our way of life onto Afghanistan. We didn't learn the lessons of history.
How has this all affected Biden and his administration's treatment of other global conflicts?
So in terms of the experts and members of Congress that I spoke to, they argued that the experience of this withdrawal, the chaos surrounding it, probably led Biden to be a lot more forward-thinking with other major issues on the global stage, especially Ukraine. A lot of the experts and Russia watchers I've spoken with have given the Biden administration a lot of credit for kind of all the background diplomatic work they did ahead of the Russian invasion. They really worked hard to ensure that U.S. allies in Europe were going to be supportive of Ukraine when push came to shove. Basically, behind the scenes, the Biden administration said, we can't afford to have another disaster like Afghanistan. We better be on the ball if push comes to shove and Putin decides to invade. And unfortunately, that's ultimately what happened. We're now 6 months into a war in Ukraine.
John, thanks so much for chatting with me.
Thanks for having me.
John Haltewanger is a senior politics reporter at Insider.
Make sure to follow The Refresh from Insider on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please leave a rating and review. It helps other people discover the show.
You can also just tell your smart speaker to play The Refresh from Insider podcast. I'm Rebecca Ibarra.
And I'm Dave Smith. Talk to you soon.